Oh, today is a sermon that is really good for me because, as you all know, I have not the greatest memory in the world. Today's sermon is titled, I Don't Recall. People, in general, have ridiculously bad memories. And I don't mean like they remember bad things. I mean they can't remember a lot of things. We think that we're remembering things correctly, and then it turns out that we're mistaken. Witnesses, eyewitnesses would swear on oath that something was indeed a fact, only to be shocked to find out when they watch a video of the event that they had recalled things improperly. I have been absolutely certain at times in my life that, for instance, like a movie that I may have seen 20 years ago, I'll be talking with somebody about the movie and I'll be like, oh yeah, and you remember how this happens? And they're like, no, that's not the way that goes. I'm like, what are you talking about? I can see it in my mind. I know exactly how that movie went. And they're like, no, you're thinking of a different movie. This movie went this way. And then I go back and rewatch the movie and it's been 20 years and I'm shocked because I'm going, that is not at all how I remember that movie going. I totally remember it a different way. But our minds will actually create things to fill in the gaps or take parts from other things. Our memories are really not that good. My sister, whenever we get together for family get-togethers, my sister, who's not quite 2 years older than me, she will be saying, hey, do you remember when you were probably about 7 and I was like 9 and we did this and got in trouble? And I'm like, I have no idea what you are talking about. And I don't just say that because my mom's in the room. We do things and things don't stick with us that should, or sometimes other people won't recall things that we do. I had an incident very recently, about, a week and a half ago. There was a guy that I used to work with. Now, it's been a long time since I worked with this guy. We worked together for about 3 years, from about 1991 to about 94. And we became friends because we worked together and we did things in our off time. And even after he left and was working someplace else, we would still hang out and do some things. He sent me a message, a week and a half ago. And he said, hey, I just wanted to know, did you hear that so-and-so had passed away? And he apparently was referring to someone else who we both knew, that we both worked with. And I had absolutely no idea who he was talking about. To make matters worse, he only said the first name, and it's one of those names that could be either a man or a woman, and so you don't know, and I've got no clue. So I'm like, no, I hadn't heard that. That's too bad. Do you know any other details? I'm trying to get him to tell me stuff that'll cue my memory, and not saying, I have no idea who you were talking about. And it's just, it's awkward. It's embarrassing sometimes when we don't remember things that we probably should be remembering. In some situations, however, a poor memory can be something of somewhat of a convenience to have. And I'm not just talking about, guys, when we don't remember something our wife asked us to do. I'm not just talking about that. There are things that sometimes come up where it's convenient not to have a good memory about stuff. I don't know if you remember this event. See what I did there? But back in 1990, February of 1990, former President Reagan took the stand in defense of Secretary of Defense or something like that, John Poindexter, over the Iran-Contra scandal. This was 2 years after they'd both been out of office, and Poindexter was on trial, and Reagan came as a witness for the defense, but there was a lot of questions there that were very awkward for the president. And 88 times during his testimony, President Reagan said, I don't recall. Now, not to be outdone, 5 years later, when First Lady Hillary Clinton was giving testimony during the Whitewater scandal, she, in less than 2 hours, said, I don't recall more than 100 times. Now, you know, that was very convenient for both of them. However, I must put in this caveat. It came out later that Reagan was suffering from Alzheimer's at the time, so maybe he deserves a little bit of a break on that. But not having a good memory can sometimes be convenient for us. Personally, with my bad memory, the fact that I can't remember things as well as I really ought to, I blame on the fact that I filled up my brain too much with 80s song lyrics. Even if they were the wrong words, they're stuck in there and they're never going out, and I just filled up too much space with that. I sometimes wonder if people before the flood, you know, back when lifespans were 700-800 years long before the flood, I sometimes have to wonder to myself, did those people were they only able to remember like the previous 100 years and everything before that was just kind of foggy? Or did they have equally good memories as well as their lifespan so that they could remember stuff 800 years earlier? It's just, to me, that's kind of a quandary. I'm curious about that. One way or another, though, God knew us really well, and he knew that we would need some help in some of these areas. There are several ways in which we can have our memories assisted in keeping things recorded. And different people have different ways in which work best for them. Not everybody remembers stuff the same way equally. When I was a kid, one of the best loved things for me when I would get together, like on holidays or family get-togethers, is the adults would be sitting around the table drinking coffee, and they'd be telling stories, you know, the family stories about way back when so-and-so did this ridiculous thing. And us kids are sitting on the peripheral just listening in to every word. And sometimes we'd put in when they'd forget to say something because we'd heard the story 100 times. We'd heard them so much we could say it as well or better than they could, but we'd even still at that point say, hey, tell about the time when you, and you know, that whatever story was that child's particular favorite. I loved those things. I can remember stories that my mom and my aunts and uncles would tell about things that happened before I was born almost as if it were something that I participated in. That is a really good way for us to remember things. In Deuteronomy, chapter 6, verses 6 and 7, right after the Ten Commandments are stated in chapter 5, and the greatest commandment is stated at the beginning of chapter 6, it says, and these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. God knew that we have poor memories, and so we would need to be taught that one way for us to know his word, the commandments that he had written for us, the instructions for life, for us to have them known by heart, was to tell it orally to each other over and over and over again. He knew that we can learn that way really well and have those things locked in really well. So he told us to do just what we do with our family stories. He told us to do with his word. Tell them to our children over and over and over again. Not only does this teach the children, but it cements it in our minds so that we won't forget what it is that we're teaching them. Repetition works for everyone. It works better with some people than it does with others, but it works with everyone. God knows this, and he knew that even though repetition was one way, some people don't learn the best that way. And so he knew that there were other ways to have things just get cemented into our minds so that we would remember. When I was in college, I got really good grades in almost everything. I did not get good grades in comp and grammar. In fact, I barely scraped by. I got like a C minus and then a C plus and then like a B minus when I took comp and grammar. And I blame that on the fact that I had a really poor education up in the wilds of the UP when I was in high school. It's got to be the teacher's fault. It couldn't have been mine. The only reason that I did as good as I did in comp and grammar is because there was this really cute chick who was helping me out learning that stuff, or else I had never even heard of diagramming a sentence. If you haven't picked up on it, that's my wife. You guys are like, what is he talking about? The other thing, sorry, Matt, I didn't do well in science in college. It just didn't. I was in over my head. I took the class that he teaches. He wasn't teaching that, of course. It was a long time ago. And then another science class, and I just barely got by with, like, I think in the two classes, I got one B and everything else was C's. I was in over my head. But everything else, well, there's sociology, but we're not going there. Everything else I did really well in, and I did it in this way. Laptops, I think they might have been invented back then, but they were ridiculously expensive, so you didn't go into class with your laptop and just start doing this. I went into class back then with notepads, big pads of paper, and as the professor spoke, I just furiously took notes. I mean, I was writing like mad for the whole time. I would fill up several pages with notes in a 55-minute class. I wasn't writing every word they said. I would like shorten the sentence up, just kind of hack it down to the basic core elements, and I'd just write furiously. And then all I had to do was the night before an exam, I would bring out my notes and read through them one time. Just one time. I could actually hear the professors giving the lecture in my mind, and I would hear the whole sentence that they were saying, even though I was just looking at things. Because for me, actually, the physical act of writing it down as I went cemented that for me. I would get like high 90s on tests just by reading through my notes one time. You know what I found out? Reading somebody else's notes did not do that for me. Reading somebody else's notes, I'd be like, what are they talking about? This doesn't even make sense. But writing it down myself just buried it in my mind, except for those two classes. Deuteronomy 17, 14 through 20 shows us how God knew that this was a good thing for a lot of people also. He says in Deuteronomy 17, 14 through 20, when you come to the land that the Lord your God is giving you, and you possess it and dwell in it, and then say, I will set a king over me, like all the nations that are around me. You may indeed set a king over you, whom the Lord your God will choose. One from among your brothers you shall set as king over you. You may not put a foreigner over you who is not your brother. Only he must not acquire many horses for himself, or cause the people to return to Egypt in order to acquire many horses. Since the Lord has said to you, you shall never return that way again. And he shall not acquire many wives for himself, lest his heart turn away, nor shall he acquire from himself excessive silver and gold. And when he sits on his throne, when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, he shall write for himself in a book a copy of this law, approved by the Levitical priests, and it shall be with him, and he shall read in it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God by keeping all the words of this law and these statutes, and in doing them, that his heart may not be lifted up above his brothers, and that he may not turn aside from the commandment, either to the right hand or to the left, so that he may continue long in his kingdom, he and his children in Israel. Did you catch what that was saying? It was saying the first thing that a king needed to do was get a homework assignment. He needed to sit down and write out, by hand, of course, himself. He couldn't just tell a scribe, hey, come in here and do this for me. The king himself had to sit down with the books of the law. That is probably Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy is where the books of the law was, and he would have to write out for himself a copy, and it had to be so perfect that the Levitical priests would come in and check his work and say, okay, yes, you did that correctly. He had to write it out for himself, and then he had to read it all the days of his life so that he would follow it. in doing so, it would keep him on the straight and narrow. Now, being the history of the kings of Israel, I have to wonder how long this actually happened before it fell out of practice. I'm guessing immediately, because right away with even David and everybody, they're doing everything that they just said they shouldn't be doing. So I'm thinking maybe they didn't actually do their homework. God knows that we don't have a good memory to do things. We need memorials to keep us remembering what we ought to remember. Yet another way in which God set up for us to be recalling things of importance is probably the one which is most commonly used in education all across the globe from time immemorial. And there is a little bit of a backstory to it, which helps explain why it was used. Turn with me to Exodus chapter 17. Exodus 17, 8 through 16. When Amalek came and fought with Israel at Rephidim, so Moses said to Joshua, "Choose for us men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand." So Joshua did as Moses told him and fought with Amalek, while Moses, Aaron, and Hur went to the top of the hill. Whenever Moses held up his hand, Israel prevailed, and whenever he lowered his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands grew weary, so they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it, while Aaron and Hur held up his hands, one on one side and the other on the other side. So his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And Joshua overwhelmed Amalek and his people with the sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Write this as a memorial in a book and recite it in the ears of Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven." And Moses built an altar and called the name of it, "The Lord is my banner," saying, "A hand upon the throne of the Lord of God, of the Lord God, the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation." Joshua and the other people who fought in the battle, they were witnesses to one part of what went on, their part. And the generations which would come afterward would have no personal memory of what had happened. It might be the tendency of people who had fought and of their descendants to start to get the story wrong in how it was remembered. That it was actually the Lord who had won the battle for them over their enemy and not they themselves. They didn't win the fight. God won the fight for them. So God told Moses to write it down and to recite it, to read it to Joshua, and presumably to the others involved and to their descendants. Only in this way would the truth of what happened be properly remembered and passed down, so that God would be properly recognized as God and his actions not get overshadowed by the pride of men. Only in this way would God be, quote, having war with Amalek from generation to generation. Amalek was dead. His armies were destroyed. His accomplishments were to be blotted out. But the memory of his defeat at the hands of God were to be remembered from generation to generation. The way that this was to be accomplished was that it needed to be written down. But having it written down does absolutely no good unless what was written down is recited to those who come after. The best way that people have been, well, maybe not the best way, but a consistent way that people have been teaching forever since there's been writing is you take the truth and you write it down, but then what's written down has to be read. Read by one person, taught to another. If you just write it down and you just leave it, that's no good. It has to be read aloud and given to the next group. One more method in which things are remembered by notoriously forgetful people is that there are things set up which by and of themselves, just seeing them, will spur the memories of people, and by seeing that, they will be reminded to teach what they see to others so that they will know what it is that they are to be reminded of, that they are also to remind other people of. This is why we have things like statues, things like memorials in Washington, D.C., stuff like that, is so that you see it, and by the mere seeing of it, the memory is spurred, and people say, well, what is that about, Dad? Or what is that about, Grandma? And you tell them, this is there to remind us of this. We didn't invent that sort of thing. God did. God had them constantly in the Old Testament setting up memorials so that when people would see, say, a pillar of stones, they would say, what is that about? And they'd say, ah, I'm glad you asked. That is to remind us that God did this for us. There's an incident that happens in Joshua chapter 22. The wars of acquiring the promised land have come to an end. They've driven out the other peoples. Now there was a good portion of Israel who had said, hey, we would like this land on the east side of the Jordan. We like this over here. And they said, well, okay, that's not technically the promised land, but you bring your warriors over, help us drive people out of the promised land, and when that's over, you can go back to the part that God is allowing you to have. So they're getting ready to go back across the river. The wars are over. They're going back across the river to the lands that God had allowed them to have over there. But they also knew that memories are really short. People are going to forget stuff. And with them not technically living in the promised land, with them going back across the river, they were a little worried, rightly, that down the road a bit, people living in Israel, in the proper part of it, might forget the part that they played. They're like, hey, we came over here for a few years and helped you guys win. We're part of you, and we're worshiping God also. So they built a replica of the altar of the Lord. Right there at the Jordan River, they built this replica of the altar of the Lord so that people would remember that, yes, we're part of you guys too. We're part of the people of God. Well, They had one little flaw in their plan. They didn't bother telling anybody else what it meant. And so when people saw it, they're like, what are they doing? They're making this false altar. They're gonna do false worship on this. We need to go and wipe them out. And they meet up with them and they're like, whoa, time out here a second. Let's explain something really quick. So that brings us to our passage there in Joshua 22, verses 24 through 28. It says, no. But we did it from fear that in time to come, your children might say to our children, what have you to do with the Lord, the God of Israel? For the Lord has made the Jordan a boundary between us and you, you people of Reuben and people of Gad. You have no portion in the Lord. So your children might make our children cease to worship the Lord. Therefore, we said, let us build an altar. Not for burnt offering nor for sacrifice, but to be a witness between us and you and between our generation after us, that we do perform the services of the Lord in his presence with our burnt offerings and sacrifices and peace offerings. So your children will not say to our children in time to come, you have no portion in the Lord. And we thought, if this should be said to us or to our descendants in time to come, we should say, behold, the copy of the altar of the Lord, which our fathers made, not for burnt offering or for sacrifice, but to be a witness between us and you. It was a great idea. They took that from things God had said for them to do, like when they crossed the Jordan, they built a memorial there. It would have been a little better if they'd have bothered to clue in the other people as to what it meant. We see something here in our worship. Every single week, which is a wonderful combination of all the different methods that I've talked to you about this morning. And it serves the same purpose as they all did. to spur the memory of us very forgetful people. During the Last Supper, there was an awful lot which Jesus said to the apostles. Only John, in his gospel, really records most of what Jesus said. Everybody else just focuses on him setting up the Last Supper there. But John focuses on what he said and not the actual passing of the bread and the cup. Jesus had been teaching them for over 3 years, and he knows that what he has taught them needs to be remembered not only by them, but by those who it's going to be passed down to from one generation to the next, down to our parents, and then down to us, and from us down to the next generation. John chapter 16, verses 1 through 4. I have said all these things to you to keep you from falling away. They will put you out of the synagogues. Indeed, the hour is coming when whoever kills you will think he is offering service to God. And they will do these things because they have not known the Father, nor me. But I have said these things to you, that when their hour comes, you may remember that I told them to you. Jesus says we need to remember. We need to remember that it was not us. It was God who did things for us. It was not us who saved ourselves. It wasn't the strength of our own will or of our own arm. Just as he said, hey, it wasn't you that defeated Amalek in the Old Testament. It wasn't us that defeated sin in the New Testament, and we needed a memorial to be there to teach us. They're sitting in the Last Supper. Jesus has instituted communion to them, recorded it. That's been recorded in the other Gospels. It is a physical reminder. It's something for people to see and remember what he did for us. It is for people who don't know, like our kids, to see and to ask, what is that all about? I remember several times when children have been out here in church with me for the first time and they see communion and they're like, what is that? What are you guys doing there? What happens when that plate gets passed? You know, and they say, why can't I, an unbaptized kid, why am I not allowed to take communion? And that is an instant for us to teach them what this is about, just as God had set up in the Old Testament with all of those things. He also speaks to them. Jesus does. He speaks to them again. He tells them a lot that he has already taught them, solidifying it to them by repetition. They're also told to write it down, what he's taught with them. And lastly, he also tells them to pass on to others what he has taught them that they have observed. All of it, is so that we might remember what God has done for us. Not just what he's done, but where our part is in it. As long as we continue to do these things, we will not fail to remember. But I'll tell you something. Having a Bible sitting in your house doesn't do you any good. I don't know if you guys remember the story, but at one point in Israel's history, the Word of God was sitting in the temple, had been sitting there for hundreds of years. Somebody was cleaning out one day and said, hey, what's this? They didn't even know what it was. And so they brought it out, showed it to the king, and they read what was in there, and they went, oh, man, we are in so much trouble because we haven't been doing any of this, and we've been doing everything we're not supposed to be doing. They had the Bible sitting there in the temple all that time, but nobody was reading it, remembering it, and teaching it to the next generation. We have communion. And sometimes, you know, we get criticized by some by some people because we do communion every week, and people say, oh, that makes it too common. Well, I can understand that argument because sometimes we get distracted. Oh, it's communion. We do this every week. But it is not wrong because it is there for us to remember. And we really should, during that communion time, be taking that time. These are symbols and emblems, visual cues for us to remember what Christ did on the cross for you and I. We need to hear it from other people. We need to be writing things down. I see people taking notes sometimes during class, and I'm like, yeah, that's really cool, because I don't know about you, but that's the only way I remember stuff, is by writing it down. We need to be reading our scripture that's been passed to us and passing it on. People think, oh, I've heard this before. Sometimes Kathy and I, she teaches in junior church, and I teach one of the kids' classes during Sunday school. And without realizing it, we were overlapping. We were both going out of the book of Acts. And one of the kids said to her, oh, I know this one. We just heard this last week in Kevin's class. Which is kind of like, oh, whoops. But you know what? Ain't nothing wrong with that. Because guess what? They remembered it. And hearing it another time helped them remember it again. If you go to church for very long, you're going to hear some things over and over again. And you might be thinking, you know, Kevin preached a sermon that sounded an awful lot like this about 3 years ago. I kind of remember it. Hey, if you remember that good, amen. Because sometimes I'll preach a sermon and I'll talk with somebody about it 3 weeks later and they're like, what? I remember that. We need to remember what God has done for us, and we need to remember that it was He and not ourselves. It was not me that got me out of my sin. It was Jesus Christ's sacrifice on the cross. It was not you that got you out of your sin. You didn't defeat sin. You accepted the forgiveness that God gave, and that is something we all need to do. This weekend is Memorial Day, and it's a national holiday, and I think that's great. I'm a patriot. But on this day, our memorial is this right here, from what somebody did when they died to save us. And it was Jesus Christ on the cross that made it possible for you and I to live forever. But only if you accept that gift. If you haven't, accepted the gift of grace and forgiveness that comes only through the act of Jesus Christ, please don't put it off. I've known people, and I don't know how I missed this, but I've been in churches where somebody has been in church for 50 years and they themselves have never come forward, given themselves to Christ, been immersed into Christian baptism, and I didn't even know that. I figured, oh, this person got baptized 50 years ago before I was born. Don't put it off. If you have not done that yourself, please come and give yourself to Christ. Be immersed in Christian baptism and rise a new creation. Please stand as we sing.